from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs. This is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Welcome back to Locked On Chiefs. Hope you all had a good day, a good evening getting through the rumor mill on Twitter. I'm certainly recovered, and we have a great show for you. Matt Derrick from Chiefs Digest is going to join me and talk about the rookie camp, where they're at, and what he's seen, and we're just going to dive right into it. So, well, he's back. Everybody's busy, and that includes Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com. Make sure you're checking out that site and everything he's doing. How are you, Matt?
Not bad, Ryan. How are you doing?
I'm here.
Take a deep breath, man. Take a deep breath.
I know, right? It's almost time where I can relax. Yeah, man. We should talk about rookies, folks. We're going to cover that in depth, but just your impression with the news today. And we are recording on Monday, folks, that Gunther Cunningham has passed. Did you cross paths with him and his time in KC, or what's your general takeaway?
You know, I really never got a chance to. His time was before my covering the Chiefs, and never really got a chance to come across him. I've had an opportunity to talk to a lot of people who did work with him, both as players, media, and really everyone has come across with just nothing but positive things to say about Gunther over the years. Was he a colorful guy? Yeah, and sometimes, you know, did that maybe to his detriment, maybe sometimes. But an absolutely world-class defensive coordinator. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. He was just too successful at too many different locations. What he did in Kansas City with that defense was just magical in the 90s. I mean, that was just a work of art, the work that they did there. And I know he was obviously very popular with Detroit, where he, I think, spent the last 8-9 years of his career there. Very sad. He was definitely a player or a coach that players that I've ever talked to, you know, really loved. I mean, they love playing for him. And it was very unfortunate that, you know, as a head coach, it had never worked out. You know, looking back on it now, you know, with perspective, you know, good grief, how many coaches out there aren't 500 coaches and get job after job repeatedly being a head coach? It's almost, you know, perplexing looking back in retrospect that, you know, Gunther never really got a chance to do it again. Because, you know, those teams that he had in KC, yeah, they were good. They had some talent, but I don't think they were loaded. I mean, especially if you look at what, you know, happened the next couple of years after Gunther was gone, you know, the cupboard was struggling there. So I don't think he necessarily had the best teams that he was working with, but he still managed to eke out a 500 record. And I think it's unfortunate they never got another chance, but he's a Hall of Fame assistant coach. I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot of guys out there that as coordinators and as assistants were ever better than Gunther.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. And, you know, I have to say one other thing, and not to dwell on the melancholy, but there's very few head coaches that can obviously put up 500, but put up 500 while having a Hall of Fame game changing player ripped away from you in the middle of it.
Yeah. I mean, you go back and you look at those 2 years of that he was head coach and just what happened. And yeah, I mean, and it, like I said, I mean, you look back in retrospect, and I think when everybody was in it, you know, yeah, I mean, you were coming off the Schottenheimer era, and Kansas City was used to winning 10 games or more every single year. And that was the expectation. And when, you know, when Gunther wasn't able to keep it going, then you really, now you look back on it and you're like, he should have gotten at least another year or two. Yeah. Coaches today would. I mean, not many coaches get, you know, blown out after 2 years, and certainly no one gets blown out after going 500 in 2 seasons.
Right.
I get it. We got it at the time when, you know, they decided to move on and rebuild the organization. It made a certain amount of sense, but in retrospect, it's kind of, you know, it's one of those things. It's kind of like, Gunther should have gotten a better chance. I mean, he really should have. I mean, and you're right. I mean, things that happened, some of the reasons why they were just a 500 team were not within his control.
Yeah.
But like I said, I mean, you know, he was a colorful coach, and maybe sometimes that was to his detriment. And sometimes as a head coach, yeah, I think his mouth sometimes got the better of him. But as a person, man, no one has a bad word to say about Gunther. And I think you saw all the things that were coming out, the salutes and everything coming out on Monday. They underscored that Gunther was a well-loved guy in this industry.
Yeah. And a heck of an American story, to tell you the truth. But You know, I he will be missed, and I'm sure that players who played over, I know Derek Johnson said something. You know, those guys are going to have an opportunity to carry that on when they become coaches. So I'm interested to see that come along as well.
Yeah, I am too. Because he definitely left a mark with a lot of different players. There's a legacy. There are Gunther guys all around the NFL, and there will be for quite a while.
Yeah. You never know who else could come back to Kansas City as one of them. So, but there are other people in Kansas City right now, and there's a lot of rookies. And you were at the camp. So I talked to Jody Fortson earlier in the year, and I know that, that he was a tryout player. Did you have any takeaways on him from the first weekend?
Yeah, you know, he flashed a couple of times. He did. I mean, you know, you just looking at numbers for especially the triad guys. I mean, there's what, 59 of them, something like that. So, you know, you're really just kind of looking at numbers and see who flashes. And yeah, I mean, Fortson did. I mean, you know, he's impressed enough. Obviously, the Chiefs decided to keep him around, and he's an interesting case. And you look at where the Chiefs are roster wise. You know, they definitely needed somebody. Especially going into the offseason workouts, I don't think you're going to see Travis Kelce till at least training camp. Right. So you need some bodies in there, and you need some competition. And, you know, John Lovett's another rookie that's in there, but he's a developmental guy. I mean, he's not a polished guy right now. He's somebody that you're hoping to maybe turn into something. Fortson's different though. Fortson's, you know, he's a little bit more polished. He's got a little bit more experience at the position. And I think it's a great opportunity for him, because I think it's a great place to be, because right now those young guys with Kelce on the sidelines, with Demetrius Harris gone, it's wide open in during these OTAs for young guys to really try and stand out and make a case.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought up Lockett as well, because I agree with you. Fortson's run routes. You know, he's been a wide receiver. Going from quarterback, you know them all, but it's a different thing to actually go out there and run them. And like you said, he's a developmental guy. I like him actually behind the line of scrimmage, a little H kind of thing with him. I think he's another, maybe a more stout, but a gimmick kind of thing that you can do and try to get some mismatches. But if you were just to take a look at the entire field of the rookie minicamp, who stood out to you, say, the top two or three?
I think number one with a bullet, without a doubt, was Juan Thornhill. Not that there weren't mistakes. You know, there was a couple times he got beat, but always seemed to be around the ball. That was the one guy that when he was on the field, it seemed like he was just always right there. And there's, I mean, you can see the football instincts. You absolutely can. That's one of the things that you hear about him, is that maybe he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's got great instincts. And the fact that, yeah, I mean, you consistently saw him around the ball, consistently saw him making plays, you know, yeah, I mean, I think that speaks to it. To me, he was the most impressive player on the field, offense, defense, bar none. Mecole Hardman, he stood out both good and bad. You definitely got to see the speed during special teams drills. It's there. You can just see, and obviously in special teams in a rookie mini camp, there's no hitting. There's nothing like that going on. But, you know, what you're looking for is a guy, you know, to hit a hole and just take off, because that's what drill's about. And yeah, you saw that. I mean, there's no touching him. I mean, he had that speed. He showed it off. The problem was the old drops. I mean, that was a consistent issue throughout rookie minicamp. And yeah, the coaches were really pushing him. They were asking him to do things he hadn't done. They were giving him routes that he hadn't done before. And maybe there was a little bit of overwhelming. And I think he definitely progressed throughout the weekend. And Andy Reid even addressed that he looked better on Monday than he did on Saturday. But to me, the drops were a concern, because that's something that you weren't expecting. And I do take it with a grain of salt, because there's no history of that. I mean, this isn't a guy that you came out thinking that there's going to be a hands problem. Mm-hmm. And I think it probably was a lot of it. It's just that there's a lot of new going on and things were overwhelming him, and he's having to think about a lot of things. And that's deadly when it comes to your hands. So to me, I'm putting an asterisk next to it, because I don't think it's a long-term deal, but it was just a little bit surprising and probably worth keeping a little bit of an eye on. You know, other than that, I mean, the wide receivers were what really stood out to me. That was where I think that the real talent was, especially some of the free agent guys and tryout guys. Felton Davis, I thought, looked pretty good. Jamal Custis looked pretty good. I'm trying to remember the guy that they ended up signing, Rashard Davis. He's a little bit older. He's been around for a couple of seasons, but he flashed. I mean, and you could see why they decided to go ahead and sign him after the rookie minicamp. That group was the standout group. And once again, I put an asterisk next to that because it's really easy to look good as a wide receiver when you can't hit anybody. But the important thing is that when it's an opportunity for you to look good, you better look good doing it. And those guys did. I mean, that group I thought was the standout group of the mini camp. They're the most promising. Now, will even turn it anything? Was this, you know, just a good weekend? We'll see. But to me, those were the guys that I was most impressed with.
I like that. And I think, folks, we'll take our first break. And when we come back, we'll get into some specifics about guys that I am interested in since I don't get to see anything.
Remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. And that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
Okay, so it's nice to be able to be there and see. There's a lot of hype going on right now, and I want to know from you, just James Williams couldn't practice. I think it was a hamstring injury or something like that.
Yeah.
Something lingering that the team knew about, not a surprise, but wasn't able there. And so Darwin Thompson gets a lot of load early in rookie camp. And your takeaway, really, from how he looks, just natural running ability, obviously the first exposure to this kind of playbook, is the hype real with him?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, obviously, we'll learn a lot more when you can start hitting, because that's the one thing, you know, for a camp like this. And at this time of year, you know, when there's not any hitting, there's no pads, running backs are in that category of guys that it's hard to judge. I mean, it really is. But at that same time, you know, what do you see out there that gives you hope? And yeah, I mean, you see the speed, you see the explosiveness, you see the ability to move laterally, to bounce around and kick things outside. I mean, you see all of that. And they were working with Darwin Thompson. He was working with Mecole Hardman and Dave Tobe. The three of them were doing a lot of special teams works together. So, I mean, it's clear that they're wanting to get Darwin Thompson involved in special teams and maybe as a returner. He's done a little bit of that in the past. You know, I think he's done mostly kickoffs, hasn't done a lot of punt returns in games, though. That's one of the things they were working with those guys on was receiving those kicks. He was in the rotation. So the hype is real. I mean, it is, because you see that there's some explosiveness there. The real question is going to be, is the explosiveness there when a guy that little starts getting hit by some really big guys? And that's going to be the next big test. But what we saw at that rookie minicamp, you want to see what this kid can do. You definitely see what Brett Veach and the scouts like about him.
So on the other side of the ball, Chris and I argued about this earlier this week. What do you see from the young guys at the corner group, which I think is still probably the most depleted position here, particularly Fenton and the UDFA Mark Fields?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was kind of a little bit up and down group. You know, some of us were even talking on Monday in regards to Mark Fields. It was, you know, just how much did you really see him? How much did you really, you know, see his number and see him flashing out there? And I don't think he really stood out to me. Now that said, I mean, it's sometimes it's difficult to do when you can't put your hands on the receivers. There's things that you can't do, so it favors the offense. I thought Fenton kind of fit in that too. I mean, you know, now it's all brand new, so it's only 3 days. Mm. So I'm not making any judgments on what you're going to see once training camp starts. But I thought those guys struggled a little bit. But conversely, yeah, Jalen Perrell from New Mexico State or Mexico. I thought he looked pretty good. I mean, to me, I thought he looked the best of that young corner group that was out there. And I mean, I think that's a good sign because, yeah, you need to find a diamond in the rough. And if he's better than advertised, that's great. I mean, that's going to be a bonus. But those Fenton and Fields are the two guys that you're going to watch the most closely, I think, of that rookie group once training camp starts. And we'll see. I mean, I don't think that either one of them made a huge case for themselves during rookie minicamp, but it's acclimation time. It really is. So we'll see what happens when, you know, they get to St. Joe in July.
Now, one guy that made an impression back on offense that I liked him coming out. He was one of my sleeper guys, and I'm glad he ended up in Kansas City because I think he's got some skills that go that way. Cody Thompson looks like a guy that kind of just slid right into his role and is working hard and it's paying off early.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, he's one of those guys. He had an injury in college. So I think that put him a little bit on below the radar for some teams. He was probably, you know, a guy that maybe some teams wouldn't even touch unless it was as a priority free agent. But I thought he looked sharp. I mean, I should have mentioned him earlier as the group that flashed because he did. I mean, he looked really good, during the rookie minicamp. He's got good size. He's got good speed. He's had good production in the past. I mean, he's been a really, you know, he's number one in touchdowns all time in Toledo history. Second leading receiver, I think, you know, he's got the explosion. I mean, he's got big playability. He's got good size. He can do that. And I agree. I mean, I think this could be a really good fit for him in this offense. You're going to find diamonds in the rough at receiver. We've seen that in Kansas City. And he fits the mold of a guy who could do it.
I'm certainly hoping. So I think that that's a really interesting position group because they're pretty diverse with the group that's going to, you know, be searching for that, you know, fourth to sixth slot there. But the one thing that the tie in with Derek Johnson's retirement is that there's another guy from his alma mater in this camp. And it looks like he has an innate ability that the Chiefs could really use because the linebacker position last year was pretty thin in terms of coverage ability. But did you get an impression on Gary Johnson in his first couple of days out?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I thought that stood out to him was the speed. I mean, that's what you hear about him, and that's what, you know, really probably got him in Kansas City is that he's a speed guy. You saw that. I mean, he is a little bit undersized, so, you know, I think that stands out too. Maybe not as big as some of the other guys, but you're right. I mean, that's a place where Chiefs are still pretty thin at that spot. I mean, even with the move and going to a 4-3, yeah, technically you don't need as many guys out there, but they're still kind of thin. And Johnson could definitely fit in there. And if DJ is going to be a guy that takes him under his wing, nobody better do you want to learn from. So soak up as much as you can there. But I think it's a good opportunity. Once again, I mean, I think that's a good spot because there are going to be some openings on this team. There are going to be a lot of opportunities for competition. They're going to give guys a lot of snaps during OTAs and at the beginning of training camp. So there's an opportunity for a guy like Johnson. And if he's going to make this team, it's because he's got the speed. And that does remind you a little bit of DJ because that's what stood out to him when he came to Kansas City was his speed.
Yeah, I think it's that particular one's going to be really interesting because I'm not sure what they've said they want to do. They can actually accomplish with the guys that are on the roster. So I'll be looking at that really closely. Folks, we're going to take our second break and I got one or two more things to ask Matt. Now you can get Locked On Chiefs on the brand new podcasting app, Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all the normal places. We're here for you 5 days a week, all off season long with guests, analysis, film review, athleticism, my draft guide, and all kinds of stuff from The Athletic and Chiefs Digest. Make sure you get subscribed today and you can do it over on the Himalaya podcasting app. So I think maybe the position that has the best competition in terms of the quality of guys competing for potential snaps come the regular season is that interior offensive line group. And I know Alec Gruddy was there Saw his presser there, and I thought he was very composed and came off very prepared for the battle that he's about to go into. But there's also, like, I don't know, is there 100 guards on this roster right now? I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think there's probably about 100 is right. Because that was the thing that kind of stood out to me, is that this team, I think, is screaming out for a swing tackle. I mean, they've really been kind of, living vicariously the last couple of years, that nothing happens to Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher, because if something does, I think you're kind of in a world of hurt. And now, from what I'm hearing from the organization, is that, they're continuing to go down that route, and they still see Cam Irving as being their number three tackle. And now you look at the makeup of this squad, and maybe they're in a position where they're going to go into that this year, because you've got a lot of guards. I mean, you've got a spot where you could roll and go into the season opener with Andrew Wiley and Duvernay Tardif as your starting guards and feel pretty good about that. And they like what they got with Khalil McKenzie. And, now you've got a guy like Nick Allegretti you think is going to make the squad. There's some other names in there too. I mean, they've got some other bodies. So they've got a lot of interior guys. And maybe that's going to mean that some of them are going to be competing at center too. Allegretti, they gave him a lot of snaps at center during the rookie mini camp. He's going to be in that competition. And they do see him as that swing interior guy that can play all three spots. But you're right. I mean, to me, they've got a lot of interior guys, but still not sure I really see that swing tackle spot, unless they go that route to decide that Cam Irving's going to be that this year. That maybe that's it. And there's still a huge debate over, what Cam Irving is. Is he a better guard? Is he a better tackle?
Oh, there's no debate.
There's a lot. You talk to people in the organization and they say they still think tackle's a better position for Cam Irving.
I know. I don't see it personally. And I know you're telling the truth. I'm just going to hammer home that I don't think it's possible. Let me ask you this, though, because I know that you've spoken with Andrew Wiley more than any other beat reporter out there. I know at one point they were thinking he could possibly be an option for a swing tackle. Do you think that's still in the cards?
It could be. I mean, he obviously played tackle in college. I think they like him so well at that guard spot, and I think he settled in so well that I think that's where they've got him locked in at. Be very interesting to see during OTAs if they do let him kick out and play a little bit of tackle, where he's at once again in the training camp. My guess is that they are going to keep him locked in at guard, and that he's going to be competing for maybe that starting left guard spot. But you're right. I mean, he's got the size, he's got the experience, he's got the background. The only thing I think that it is that they see him as being a potentially very good, if not top tier guard, and maybe just an average tackle.
Gotcha. Yeah. So this could end up being another situation where they go into, well, we've got starter X here, and if somebody goes down a tackle, we're going to slide him out and bring in the backup guard rather than a one for one swap, right?
Yeah, the Chiefs seem to go into training camp every year with a plan for offensive line, and something pretty quickly happens that blows it all up. I mean, last year we went into the training camp with the expectation that, hey, maybe Cam Irving was going to be the swing tackle. Maybe he was going to be the Zach Fulton of that line, being able to play any spot. He's going to be the sixth lineman. And then, he nails down the starting guard spot and never really doesn't move from there. So we'll see. I mean, what their plan might be now in May versus what it's going to be in September, it can always change. And it always seems to change on this offensive line.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a rotating door there. But, like, at least they have options. So I'm feeling pretty optimistic. Are you looking forward, or what's the top thing you're looking forward to in OTAs when they start? What is it, the 21st?
Yeah, starts next week. Starts for real. I think it's the first practices on Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week. I'm looking at the front seven. I mean, yeah, we want to see what they kind of have maybe in the secondary, but we kind of have an idea about how that's going to shake out, where guys are going to be, at least the rotation right now. But to me, I want to see that front seven. I want to see where guys are lining up on the defensive line, you know, if it's going to be a group that really does move around a lot and doesn't maybe have as clearly defined roles, that, you know, they've got some guys at ends that can kick inside and move around, where Breland Speaks is going to be, where Chano Passanio is in this rotation, how the guys are going to shake out as far as, you know, who's going to be the Sam, Mike, Will, who the backups are going to be. To me, that's wide open. I mean, we've got ideas about who's going to be where, but I don't think that's written in stone. And how the rotation is going to shake out, I think, is also another big question. So to me, that's the one I'm most interested in looking at.
Well, I'll be waiting with bated breath for your reports from camp. So folks, make sure you're checking out Chiefs Digest, because that's where it's all going to be. We'll have links in the show notes, as well as on the Locked On Chiefs Twitter account. Make sure you hit that with any questions. And Matt, thanks for all the time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Ryan. Always great talking to you.
And folks, we'll be back tomorrow. We got the mailbag on Friday and all the regular old stuff. So if anything earth-shattering breaks, we'll let you know. Thanks for listening today. We'll talk to you then.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.